Listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, George.
Your New Orleans Pelicans pull off a win last night. Oh, how many of y'all actually watched? But they did win, 114-95. Scott Kushner in 15 minutes. We'll talk a little bit about the team winning their second game in a row. It's a big deal. They hadn't done it since November, okay? They face the Cavaliers tomorrow. We'll touch on that. And still plenty to come on Saints. Doug Peterson, Nick Foles speaking yesterday what they had to say. They're a different team. Doug Peterson is confident in his Eagles squad. And then, that game last night. Yeesh. Poor Tua.
You know, just like what Xavier said, we had a great season, but just five words. Good is not good enough. We didn't finish the way we wanted to finish. We didn't do the things we needed to do to execute and be successful in this game. And that's all it is.
Always good enough. Mr. Clint Sterner leads things off in hour number two. Arkansas game day over on CST, part of the SEC network back in the day as well. Studies the SEC as good as anyone and works with young quarterbacks. I'm going to get to that here in a quick sec. First, man, happy new year to you. Happy holidays. Hadn't spoken to you since 2018. What's up, man? Clint, how you doing?
Man, all is well. Same to you, brother. It's all good. The new year started off with fireworks, man. It's been fun. Been in the studio in Houston and Little Rock and talking college ball, NFL ball. I love this time of year, man. College football playoffs, bowl games, NFL playoffs. I'm loving it.
Just a quick overview on some of the things, obviously, that social media is putting out there and a lot of people that cover the game. We'll get into the game specifically here in a second and the fact that you actually work with young quarterbacks and something that Saban said yesterday in the post game. But what do you say to the folks that this morning are saying, aha, the SEC is overrated. Georgia and Bama, they got waxed. Look at what's going on there. What do you say to that?
Well, I've never been one to say that the SEC is by far and above the best conference because of Alabama and Georgia. I firmly believe anybody that doesn't believe that the SEC is the top conference and there's a pretty good sized gap between them and everybody else. Anybody that doesn't believe that doesn't follow the game, doesn't study the game. But I do disagree with everybody that says it starts with Bama. It starts with Georgia. The reason that the SEC is as powerful as they are and the gap is what it is between them and the other conferences is the middle of the pack. I've said that from day one. Eliminate the best team in every conference. Eliminate the worst team in every conference. And what you're left with is really the power of that conference. And there's zero doubt about it that the SEC, the middle of the pack, teams, say, let's say 3 through 8, 3 through 9, are far better than everybody else's 3 through 9. And so, with that said, you look at what LSU did, you look at what Auburn did, you look at what Kentucky did. That's where the strength lies in this conference. I mean, Alabama is a great, great football team. Georgia is a great, great football team. Win, lose, or draw, they're powerhouses across the country. Look at what Florida did. Big time turnaround. That 5+ wins from 2017 to 2018. I mean, the middle of the pack of the conference is what drives it, which drives the strength. And it is what should drive everybody's conversation, not Alabama.
Yeah, you saw Kentucky play really well this year. LSU had a better year than a lot of people thought as well. You see what A&M can maybe be under Jimbo Fisher. So to your point, there's a lot more teams that are competitive and pretty good other than Alabama and Georgia. That said, let's take a look at this game last night. I don't think anybody saw 44-16 coming, although, as I mentioned to you in the text earlier today, you might have seen something of a weakness in Alabama. This was Marcus Spears yesterday, and I started to chuckle. I'm like, my goodness, if Clint Sterner didn't say this to the left of me on the set of Arkansas game day one Saturday, hear what he had to say.
Gene was talking about the come to Jesus meetings and all the things that's going to go on. And I totally agree with you, Gene. But I'm telling you what one of those meetings are going to consist of. We're going to get back to slapping people in the face. And we're going to run the football, and we're going to be physical at the line of scrimmage. I guarantee you right now, Nick Saban is already thinking about, I got away from it. We was putting up 50 points a game, and we were throwing the ball all over the yard. Our quarterback was a Heisman Trophy contender. All of these great things happened, and I'm not saying by any means anything is wrong with that. His MO for his whole coaching career has been physical at the point of attack and running the football and stopping the run, and they did neither.
Well, that sounds like something you said most of the year, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, man, look, I didn't see the 44-16 coming either, but I just know this. I know that the bully ball that Alabama once was, they won with ball control. They won with staying out of third and long. They won with dominating the clock. They won with not getting penalties. They won with the ability to give their defense rest on the sideline when times were tough, when they were going against a team that scored quick. They would give their guys time to recover. So everything that Alabama once won with, they've done a 180. And what they've gone to, although it's awfully sexy against, you know, about 10 of their 15 games this year, it's awfully sexy when your quarterback's sitting back there and he's got 5 yards of space in the pocket to all sides. His receivers are creating 3 and 4 yards of separation. They've got time to run double moves. A lot of run after catch, a lot of missed tackles, those kind of things from the offensive side of the football, man. And when that's the case, it's fun. It's fun to win. But when the playing field is level and you win in the pass game, it's my problem with all these air raid guys. When that's what you rely on, when you rely on your quarterback catching the ball in the gun and distributing the football, and that's what you do 50 times a game, and that's where your strong point is, what you practice every week, then there's a lot can go wrong. For instance, you have to protect well. Clemson had a hell of a front. There was no way in hell going into that game that Tua was going to be able to stand back there and take gun snaps and be successful without getting hit consistently. Mm-hmm. The second thing, Gus, the referees made a point early. They let the DBs and receivers go at it. They were not going to have – I remember Trevor Lawrence throwing a ball to Hunter Renfro, who was literally laying on his back 3 yards out of bounds when the ball hit him. They were going to let the DBs on both sides of the football be extremely physical. That you don't take that into account when you're a high-powered offense. That changed Alabama's game. They hit a couple of big plays, but that changed the game. It changes the momentum. It changes your whole approach. And those are all things you don't have to worry about if you're a power run team. If you can line up and play bully ball and just power guys and take their heart from them, then you can change the game. You can swing the momentum. You can give your defense rest. Alabama doesn't have the ability to do that any longer. And they ran up against a monster that could counter their passing attack, and they had no answer.
That's a very good way to look at it, and I think that's the thing. You didn't have that running game that they could sort of go to and score at will. I mean, in the past, the big plays that Alabama had, Clint, came out the backfield, right? They could hand it to a Henry. They could hand it to an Ingram. They could hand it to a Heisman Trophy candidate, and they could take it to the house. And they, more importantly, as you used to say during the season, they just took your will because they would just pound you and pound you and pound you. And by the third, fourth quarter, you didn't want to tackle them anymore. You couldn't. And that ability was gone. I think that's something that really stood out as well. And you got to give credit to Dabo and that coaching staff and what they've done on the other side too, just game plan and scheming wise. They were ready for Alabama.
There's no doubt. There's one thing in the immediately after the game, that interview with Dabo Swinney, something stood out to me. He said once they realized in the game that they were going to be able to dictate what coverage they got from Alabama, at that point, he said, I knew we could make plays. I knew we could score points. To me, again, that's something that Alabama, we haven't even talked about. I think the problem is the change on the offensive side of the ball. They're now a vulnerable football team. When you rely on a guy throwing the football around like that, routes and timing and the weather comes into play and the ref's ability to let them, there's a lot of factors that can disrupt the pass game. But the defense was very, they lost, I heard Herb Street say last night, they lost 6 DBs from the 2017-18 team to this year's team. They lost 6 DBs. They've got great players, but when they lose a ton of them like that, it's hard to recover. And at the end of the day, Quinnen Williams got a lot of credit up front. No doubt about it. He's a great player. But they were not as good up front as everybody gave him credit for. They were not as good in the back end as everybody gave him credit for. I knew Clemson was going to be able to score points. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. The X factor here is what we talked about on the offense. Alabama's inability to slow the game down, to swing the momentum on offense by just pounding, by just going out and saying, hey, we're fixing to get, we're going to feed it to you. I don't care if you like this meal or not. I'm going to spoon feed it to you. The inability to do that allowed Clemson to run away with this thing. I thought they should have went to Jalen Hurts early in the third quarter, like 8 or 9 minutes into the third quarter, because they had shown, Alabama had shown that they could run the ball. They had converted some fourth downs, I think three fourth downs, where they went wildcat and just said, hey, we're going to run this thing. And I think they should have went to Hurts earlier in the eight or nine minute point of the third quarter when it was a 21-point game. I thought, okay, now if you get Hurts in there, you're gashing him in a run game. You're not converting in a red zone with a gun quarterback in there. I thought they should have made that adjustment at that point because they were running the ball effectively.
Clemson 10 of 15 from third down. Alabama 4 of 13 from third down. That was a huge difference in this game. Alabama just could not get off the field, Clint, to your point. But you saw Trevor Lawrence just kind of not just pick him apart, just make the right read, make the right throw. Nick Saban had this to say afterwards, and I thought about you since you actually have a quarterback school and you work with young quarterbacks. Hear what he had to say.
He's playing in a good system and a good scheme. That's somewhat similar to what he played in high school. And I think that I got this ask at the press conference the other day, why do more freshmen, are they able to play, especially at quarterback? And I think there's a greater similarity with the offense that they grow up with and the offense that they play in college. So there's a lot more similarities. And I think the quarterback position is a little easier now because it's not all drop-back oriented. RPOs have made it very simple, you know, for the quarterback in a lot of ways. So not a surprise to me, and I think you'll see more and more, you know, young quarterbacks be able to contribute early on because of those similarities in their training.
Clint, you saw the national championship game a year ago. Two freshman quarterbacks starred in that. Hurts was just a sophomore. And then you see it again this year. Trevor Lawrence, you know, leading the way, and Tua was just a sophomore, his first full year being a starter. You work with young QBs, you know, before high school, try to get them to that next level. Why do you think there's so much success? Do you agree with what Coach Saban had to say there?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about the explosion of 7-on-7, the explosion of 7-on-7 not just being a school in season or off season, a couple of month type event. Nowadays, it's not like Texas has an actual state champion in 7-on-7, and there's AAU essentially, for lack of better terms, AAU 7-on-7 where they're traveling around and playing these big tournaments, and kids are getting exposure. The training aspect of it, albeit there's a small percentage that's worth a flip, there's a lot of them that are reinventing the wheel and actually killing kids. But the training aspect of it is kids are getting training in the off season. They're getting training year round. High school coaches are getting training. Those guys are so much better and so much more aware of what it takes to play the quarterback position that position as a whole on the college level has improved drastically. But you know, I'm not an early to play guy. I mean, I just never have. I never have been. I never will be. I mean, you look at last night. You talk about quarterbacks playing early. Tua made some critical mistakes that were, I think they were a result of youth. They were a result of not being in that situation and seeing certain coverages and throwing the ball up for grabs, taking maybe reading the field deep to short instead of short to deep, or maybe taking what the defense gives you at all times throughout the year and not letting those bad habits creep into your game. And so while one guy on one side of the football played extremely well for a freshman, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's a big-time talent. And the thing is, Gus, Trevor Lawrence is, I mean, he's just in the tip of the iceberg, man. I mean, he is still very insecure in his movements and in his throws and his arm action. Wait till this guy gets to the point where he's confident and he knows what he's doing and he's seen things a million times before. And he starts really ripping the football. You can see a difference in, I don't know, I'd say 25% of his throws last night where he was confident. He knew where he was going with it. He knew what the defense was doing, and he let it rip. That is special. There was another five or six big plays, big throws that he made that were like you could see him second guessing and kind of guiding the football. Now, they were still completions because he's freakishly talented, but you could see him guiding the football. When this kid gets it and figures it out, and I say that in a sense of when he gets the experience, there's going to be no stopping. It's going to be absolutely ridiculous. And Gus, if we'd had this conversation a day ago before this game, I'd have said, you know, big kid, big arm. I'm not real sure. I don't know about him. I don't know who he's going to be. There's no doubt this kid is going to be great, and it's just a matter of him getting games under his belt. This time next year, he'll be the best guy in the game, and there'll be no doubt about it. Tua's not going to be able to touch him. There's nobody in college football going to be able to touch him relative to distributing the football from the pocket.
Yeah, he's got some size, man, some mobility, and as you mentioned, that arm talent. Clint Sterner, you can follow him on Twitter, at Clint Sterner, Sterner, and go check out quarterbackmind.com. And how old does Carver have to be to start going to your quarterback schools?
I tell him this, man, when a kid can listen, retain, and apply, there is value in it. If he can't listen, we're about five. If he don't listen to daddy for more than about a minute, pump your brakes and bring him on next year, baby.
I hear you, man. Hey, man, thanks for joining us on short notice. I wanted to get your opinions on it and looking forward to next college football season. It'll be here before you know it, bud.
That's right. We'll see you, brother. You be good now.
Yep, there he goes, Clint Sterner, former Razorback and Dallas Cowboy quarterback, and now an analyst of college football. Quick break. We come back. Yes. The Pelicans played last night. 114-95 was the win. Two players that barely get playing time get off the bench, get on the court, produce, and help a win. The second in a row. Do they need to see more time? I'll ask Scott Kushner of The Advocate next on ESPN New Orleans.
You Bet Your Boots footwear store has been in business since 1979. Looking to gift boots this holiday season? Their best sellers are the Irish Setter, Two Harbors, and Marshall series. You Bet Your Boots also carries Red Wing, Irish Setter, Works, and Dan Post. Do you have foot, knee, or back pain? Try their corrective insoles and footwear by Spenco, focusing mainly on the working man. They can also accommodate a casual fit in their Dan Post line. So shop until you drop at Bet Your Boots on Bayou Gardens Boulevard for discounts between 15 and 20%.
Car guys know not all motor oils are created equal, because when your engine hits 75,000 miles, cheaper motor oils won't do. That's why Valvoline created full synthetic high mileage with Max Life technology, designed to fight sludge, condition seals, and better protect critical engine components as your engine ages. Keep your high mileage ride driving well into the future. Valvoline, trusted for 150 years. Now at O'Reilly Auto Parts, buy 5 quarts of Valvoline Full Synthetic High Mileage and a filter for just $34.99. Terms and conditions may apply.
T-Bob here, and when my heating and cooling system needs repair, you know I call the experts at River City's Total Maintenance. They're fast, they're professional, and they'll come out the same day you call. That's right, the same day, and they're going to get the job done right. You couple that with 2 and 3 year warranties and a 100% money back guarantee, and as you can see, you cannot go wrong, my friends. So if you need same day service on your heating and cooling systems, call River City's Total Maintenance at 504-841-3300. That's 841-3300, and tell them T-Bob sent you.
As a leader in sanitation for the oil and gas industry, Joe's Septic Contractors caters to all field clients offering vacuum truck service for the offshore tanks, vessels, or treatment plants containing sewage or gray water. Joe's Septic Contractors offers state-of-the-art offshore portable toilets with cages and certified safety slings. Call Joe's Septic Contractors today at 985-632-5592 or visit our website at www.joeseptic.com.
Is pain putting a strain on your quality of life? Don't suffer in silence. Get relief at the Pain Center of Thibodaux Regional. Dr. Luis Hernandez and Dr. Keith Duplantis can provide solutions to neck, knee, and back pain, as well as pain associated with injury, arthritis, nerve damage, and migraines. Get help for your pain at the Pain Center of Thibodaux Regional. Call today, 985-493-4080, or go to Thibodaux.com.
Got a hot take?
I've got something to say.
Let's hear it. Call us at 800-998-1003 or tweet us at ESPN Radio NOLA.
I'm a communicator.
Now, back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
We won a game yesterday. And if we win one today, that's two in a row. We win one tomorrow, that's called a winning streak. It has happened before.
It is. That was a fictional coach. This is the real coach of the New Orleans Pelicans.
I think it's important in that, you know, we're at the halfway mark now. And, you know, we talked about it. There's really not a whole lot of margin of error. You know, we're the 14th team in the West. You know, now that being said, obviously you win five in a row or, you know, five out of six and you can leapfrog some teams, but, you know, we're at the point now where, you know, we have to put it together. It's not one of those deals where we can lose five in a row and still feel good about it. You know, we're at the point now where we have to win games.
Ah, nothing like must-win games for the Pels the rest of the way, and it's January 8th. Three games out of the eighth and final spot in the playoffs currently held by the Lakers. They've been waiting for LeBron to get back from his injury. Scott Kushner of The Advocate joins us at Scott D. Kushner, the way to follow on Twitter. Scott, so much to get into other than the fact that I love how you tweeted, why do they keep scheduling games on National Championship Monday?
So ridiculous, right? Like, of all the places to do it, like, can't the NBA just avoid here and Atlanta? And that's pretty much it. I mean, nobody else cares, the whole country, of all the NBA cities. Like, but these two cities very much care every single year. So
I mentioned the tweet, Nidge, which showed that New Orleans was third in the country in ratings watching the national championship game yesterday. All right, so in case they didn't watch, how do you describe yesterday's 114-95 win? I mean, I'm looking at it back and forth, you know, through apps, and I guess the things that stood out to me was AD 19 in the first quarter, so he got off to a good start. That helps eliminate bad first quick starts that they've had trouble in. And there they are, the two guys I always keep asking you about, or at least fans do, right? Where's Jahlil Okafor? Where's Frank Jackson? They play, and darn it if they don't have an impact in the game.
They did. They had a huge impact, and it was very meaningful considering how bad this bench has been for most of the season. And without Etwan Moore, without Nico Mirotic, which means you're trapped from a depth perspective. But they came out and played great. And those two guys helped carry them. They got off to a little bit of a slow start in the third quarter. Alvin Gentry called timeout. From there, they just rolled. And this team played defense really well. They moved the ball really well in the second half. And they didn't, you know, give in those little mistakes. They didn't go those long stretches without being able to score. All those things that have, you know, kept them from winning consistently, they kind of put the kibosh on last night. Now, that was a struggling Memphis team. I think they've now lost, you know, 11 of 13 or something. So it's not as if, you know, great opponent or anything, but it is telling that they can finally, at least, say they have won two in a row for the first time in about 6.5 weeks. So it does matter, and it is a telling sign to hold a team to a season low in scoring. So a really good night overall for the world.
One of the other things, too, and again, for those that aren't following, I mean, Memphis is right there. They've had a better season, and they've struggled as of late here, going to an 8 of their last 10, but that's just it, right? We looked at this stretch, and if you're going to make a move, it's going to do it now. You got to win games that you're supposed to. But with this team, Scott, you can't ever really say that. And we saw that two games ago. At least they did take care of Cleveland. But here's the thing. You got to, I guess, baby step it again, right, and learn how to finish. 11 lead changes, 9 ties. What I see when I see that is at least you did finish, though. You did separate yourself. AD got out early, and you finished the game. That's something this team hasn't been able to do.
Yes, and it really was kind of a crucial turning point when they had some bench guys in there, you know, at the tail end of the third quarter, and instead of, you know, the lead shrinking or disappearing completely, they were able to push it out. And that bench did a great job. Frank Jackson, you know, knocked out a couple threes, which was huge, and then he ends up kind of pouring in a season, a career high in scoring. You know, you did all those things that have kept them, have been so frustrating this whole season, which is, look, AD's got 36 and 14, and they still can't win. And it's like, and they easily could have lost last night if you had a similar performance of what we've seen many times this season from those role players and the guys off the bench. But those guys performed well, and instead of it being a ridiculously frustrating loss, it was a lopsided win, and that is the difference in this team. I mean, if you could just get that little bit of productivity and that shift to occur from you know guys 6 through 12 on the roster, you can change the whole complexion of the season, especially against opponents like this. Now, the problem will be when you start playing the better teams, of which we'll get a really strong look at. Not this week, but starting next week, they play a whole bunch of playoff teams in, you know, about a week and a half span, and that is going to be very telling.
Yep. No doubt. Scott Kushner of The Advocate covers the Pelicans. And I think one of the other things you see, too, as well, is at some point, right, Scott, health is going to come to this team. I know we talk about it with the Saints all the time, how healthy could that O-line get. 12th straight game, Nico Miritich's right ankle is not allowed him to play, and I get it. After he played and he re-hurt it in the game, you heard Gentry is as blunt as possible. Until he's 100%, you don't get him back on the court. How close is he, though?
Practice today, so that's definitely an important step. I would be surprised if he's, by the end of today, we don't hear that he's been at least upgraded to questionable.
Oh, wow.
I think they'll work him out. I think they're going to work him out before the game tomorrow.
Okay.
And see what it looks like. And if not, I'd be really surprised if he doesn't play on the weekend. I think, you know, if you're going to let him practice and you're going to let him go, you know, out there and play full court, all that kind of stuff, he's got to be just about ready to go. And he's in all the drills, he's doing stuff. They were hopeful he could get back last game. I do expect him to at least give it a shot tomorrow night, and even if he can't completely go, then maybe over the weekend. But he's close. And the question, though, is just because you get him back healthy does not mean you're going to be healthy. It just means you're going to be healthy for a night, you know? And it's like this ongoing quest that I hear of this team is like, you know, you ask about, you know, they're at the midway point in the season right now. What's clearly been a disappointing season. And the only response you get from most of these guys is that they haven't been healthy. And it's like, you're never going to be healthy. This isn't the NBA. Like, it's very hard.
Right.
You know, like, you're never healthy. Like, you're always going to miss somebody. Like, if the only way you feel like you can judge a team is right when they're at full strength, I think that's ludicrous. You have to build a whole roster for the idea that guys are going to get hurt in this game. The fact is, Anthony Davis has not missed a lot of time. Drew Holiday has missed no time. And those two guys are the only guys you really can't afford to lose. The rest of them should be able to replace for bits and pieces when they are not able to go. Does it hurt? Absolutely. But the fact that Elfrid Payton caused like a crater in this team is a pretty glaring problem that exists. And he's been a huge help since coming back. But just the idea that he is that important, I think, does show some structural issues above the roster.
Final question for you, because I'm sure Jordan the intern is just begging for me to ask you this. It looks like when Okafor plays, he helps. It looks like maybe Frank Jackson just needs minutes. You're below 500. I know you have to win now. You have to throw as much as you can out there to try to win. Do you keep playing some, you know, these guys that again, fans just text me like, when they play well. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know. Do you think Gentry continues to give these guys some minutes?
Yeah, and, you know, he said today that he expects, even with Miritich coming back soon, that he expects Okafor to maintain a spot in the rotation, which I was surprised to hear that he would do that up front about it. And he said he's earned it. He's earned the spot, and he has played well. He still does some things that just, you know, aren't quite up to the caliber, which is, you know, team defense. He's slow-footed. He can't get around some guys, but, you know, there's some issues there, but he certainly adds an element that they don't have in a traditional five, and he's able to score in a lot of ways that other guys can. He certainly helps rebounding when AD is oftentimes the only rebounder on the floor. And I think that he's been a huge boost to this team. And I think Frank Jackson's the same way, that he can provide some shooting on the outside. He can certainly provide a lot of energy. His team defense, though, same problem. He gets lost a lot on screens. He doesn't quite know who to pick up, and obviously he's a smaller guy, and so when he gets put on the wrong person, he's a matchup liability. But, you know, they're going to keep playing them because, frankly, nobody else on that bench has stepped up to the point where you are going to play them over him. Like, Ian Clark has not commanded minutes over Frank Jackson at this point. I don't think anybody has really, or certainly Tim Frazier, I think, will get pushed out of the rotation before Frank Jackson does now. So, I think you're just going to see that kind of shift into being more of those guys' role than it is, you know, as the bench kind of evolves. But yeah, they have high expectations for both those guys, and I think they feel like both of them can help. It's just they're going to not play the bench much. I mean, we've seen it. They are going to play the starters as much as they possibly can.
Yep.
And because there's a giant drop-off, quite frankly, in skill when they do.
I met you covering the Tulane Green Wave, so you cover college football. You love college football. You're a Tennessee Volunteer, so I'll ask you this as we close out. What was it like for you to watch the game last night? What do you take away from that, and did it make you feel good to see Alabama get throttled?
It only made me feel good to see Butch Jones on that Alabama sideline. That was the only thing I enjoyed. That, and I bet the over, which was fantastic. But what a fraud that guy is. Good Lord. What a – I mean, and it's just wonderful that he doesn't get a ring. But otherwise, I mean, it's really hard to dislike Clemson, honestly. I mean, and maybe it's because I don't watch the ACC that much, but they are – they seem to do it in a way that you know, they got a coach kind of out of nowhere. They built the program, you know, the right way. They climbed a long, slow climb, and now they've gotten to the top, and they're staying there. And it just feels a little bit more joyous than when Alabama wins, right? That they it feels so businesslike whenever Alabama wins a championship. It does not feel that way when Clemson does.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. Well, thank you so much for joining us, man. And let's see if the Pels can win three in a row. You know how it is. Every time you say they should win, I have no idea what to expect tomorrow. So
but if they lose to the Cavs on the second half of back-to-back at home, that's it. That's the fire will be coming off of my fingers as I write whatever column. Because
there it is.
If you've ever heard of a must win, tomorrow's a must win. That's a joke if they lose this game tomorrow.
Well, I said when they played at Cleveland, it would be a tarmac game. There would be a Mercedes-Benz waiting when that plane landed, and there better be a firing of everyone that walked off the plane. I would have understood it was about 1 a.m. when I didn't care. It better had been the Lane Kiffin tarmac game because, you could not lose that game to an 8-win team that's trying to desperately get into the lottery. Anyway.
They're on back-to-back in New Orleans. That would be a disaster.
That's Scott D. Kushner to read that disaster column. No, it's not happening. If you want to follow him on Twitter, no, do that. And, of course, over on The Advocate, check out his work. Thank you, man. Appreciate it, Scott.
See you, Gustavo. Have a great day.
There it goes. When we come back, Joey, you know I love to play the calls. We'll focus a little bit on the Saints and Eagles here. In hour two, we'll play a lot more from Peterson and Foles and some other things and get your take here. I'm in Philadelphia calling a Tulane Temple game today, and there's a lot of excitement about Sunday's game. Very confident from hotel staff to staff where we watched the game last night, dinners staff. I mean, the chef is sitting out there saying, oh, yeah, I feel good about Sunday, giving us reasons why, a healthier offensive line, worried about offensive line for the Saints. Are they healthy? And yes, everyone is trying to convince me about Nick Foles, the difference that he makes. So, yeah, it'll be interesting come Sunday, 3:40, when the Saints take on the Eagles. They are an 8-point favorite as of now, 48-7. Was the initial meeting between these two teams back in the day, earlier this season. But when we come back, Joey, I love playing these calls, and he's gotten a ton of attention. I meant to ask Scott before we hung up with him, because he referenced him as if Graf spoke Spanish. The Spanish call, have you heard it, of the missed field goal by the Bears that sent Philly to New Orleans? I'll play that coming back next on ESPN New Orleans.
Here, host of ESPN's First Take, and I am super excited because football is back, and you know where you'll find me this fall, at the game, thanks to Vivid Seats, the official ticket partner of ESPN. With the Vivid Seats app, it's so easy to find awesome seats to any game, and every purchase is backed by their 100% buyer guarantee. Head to VividSeats.com and enter promo code ESPN at checkout to get 10% off your first order. Get in the action with Vivid Seats. Your team needs you.
Guaranteed promotional terms available on VividSeats.com.
Lowe's shoppers, we're closing our East New Orleans, Louisiana store located at 5770 Reed Boulevard and liquidating all current product inventory at this location. Hurry in and take advantage of huge deals on everything from appliances, tools, flooring, holiday decor, and more. While Lowe's of East New Orleans is closing, we want to ensure you we're still here to serve you at nearby locations and online. Visit Lowe's.com to find the Lowe's that's most convenient for you. Save big. Start with Lowe's. While supplies last, see store for details.
If you're pregnant, then you know just how much there is to learn. The Louisiana Department of Health's Family Support and Coaching Program can help. When you join this program, a nurse will come to you and help with things like having a healthy pregnancy, caring for your newborn, breastfeeding, and helping you be the best parent you can be. Best of all, this program is built around you, and you don't have to pay anything. To learn more about this great program and to see if you're eligible, call 1-800-251-BABY and see if it's right for you. Visit us online at partnersforfamilyhealth.org. Every family deserves a great coach.
Louisiana broadcasters are looking for the best of the best.
Announcing the 2019 LAB Broadcast Scholarship Program.
Two $2,000 scholarships are available to Louisiana broadcasting students.
For complete details, call 1-800-364-7260 or go to www.broadcasters.org to apply.
The Louisiana Association of Broadcasters Scholarship Program.
Good for you, good for us, great for Louisiana.
Escúchame, it is Dan Levitation, ESPN Radio.
Think about this, right? What they're trying to fix there is old guy referee chasing a play where there may or may not have been a bump, and that's worth 70 yards in a game of violent real estate acquisition.
Right.
Like, you can't have, nobody can get a 70-yard play, and then you just lob a ball up, and old guy's running back there, and maybe there's some hand contact, and you get a 70-yard penalty. And I think what happens when you change this rule, though, is now, are you not risking that football is going to have fewer and fewer actual deep plays, because cornerbacks, if they're beaten, they're just going to tackle a dude. They're just going to take him out and take the 15 yards. Are the pros going to, the pros playing by college rules going to just take away all deep balls because corners who are beat are not going to do anything other than just grab a guy and you eliminate any possibility of deep play?
The Dan Levitation Show with the Stugats on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
Adventure, intrigue, mystery, romance.
It's a storm of entertainment that brings down the house.
Now, back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill on ESPN 100.3 FM and ESPN 1003.com.
Dallas Cowboys taking on the Rams. Lots of national folks saying, Rams going to throttle the Cowboys. Saints taking on the Eagles, and a lot's being made and talked about, obviously, about the call in which Cody Parkey's, you know, field goal was tipped barely, little fingers on it, but he missed right after making the first one, and Peterson called the timeout to ice the kicker. Joey, I still think to this day, what was it, the national championship? Was it Clemson, Alabama? I think
Clemson, Alabama with the Russian, yeah.
Yes, with Deshaun Watson, yes. The Russian call of that, still our favorite. This one's up there, man. This one's up there. Scott Kushner tweeted this and quote tweeted it and said, if Todd Graffanini spoke Spanish.
Pie de Cody Parkey. 43 yardas. El snap. Le mete el pie. Distancia, dirección. Le dio el poste. No, falló. No, señor. Los Eagles se van con la victoria. ¡Ay, papá! No, señor.
No, papá.
Chicago, Chicago. Nos vamos para New Orleans. Philadelphia gana el partido. Le dio el poste.
Obviously, that's the Philly Spanish call. I love them. I love the Chicago. But ay, papá. I mean, yes, that's fantastic. That is fantastic. That is the Spanish call. One more, and then we'll go to Corey. This is WBBM Chicago, followed by WIP Philadelphia. This is the Eagles.
This is it right here.
10 seconds.
This is Chicago.
Parkey lines it up. O'Donnell on one knee.
Ball is snapped, placed, kick, and it is no good. No good. It is no good, and the Eagles win.
He missed it.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
Painful.
You see the flight of the ball. It's a little bit crooked, but you never imagine it could hit the upright again, and it hits the upright squarely, hits the crossbar, and bounces back into the end zone.
The mulligan, you're comfortable. You swing that club and you hit that mulligan with no problem.
He missed it! And the Eagles are heading to New Orleans!
They are headed to New Orleans.
There you go. Corey, thanks for giving the show a call. What's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, Gus, I missed you yesterday. I know you was up there in Philly. I called last week or something like that, and I told you that don't sleep on this team. I picked Philly to upset Chicago. Mm-hmm. And before I talk about the Philly-New Orleans game, I'm kind of chiming on the game with Wild Card Weekend. I think you can go ahead and, you know, and say that the extra point, you see that the field goal cost them. I just think Chicago left a lot of points on the board. And I think mm-hmm. Trubisky, it's like the moment was too big for him. I mean, I went back and say about the year that Goff was pretty much his first playoff game. I think he was kind of shaky. Mm-hmm. He was shaky, and I mean, the opportunity was there for him, and he missed throws that he should have made. But the fast forward to the Saints game, that's I'll be honest with you, I think the Saints gonna blow him out. You know, I really do think that.
I just think at the end of the day, man, it comes up to matchups. It comes up to amount of playmakers that you have. There's a reason you're the number one seed. There's a reason that, you know, everyone's got to come to your place to do it. It's got to be good. I'm not saying it's a walkthrough. Could it get to that point? I don't know. I mean, maybe the 48-7 could motivate them to get there as well. I think the biggest difference, I'm going to read here in a quick second from PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Their web folks put up an article on how they're a different team. Look, they're 6-1, including the playoff win, since they played the Saints. So they're 6-1. They're playing better football. Meanwhile, here in New Orleans, people are concerned about the offense. They're worried about the health of the offensive line. So it is a different feeling going into those games and going into this one. I get that. But I think, man, I'm with you. And this is what I've tried to tell, whether it's, the Reaper on Fridays in Jay Hardgrave or Jordan the Intern or anybody else. At the end of the day, I understand the Nick Foles is making plays for them. I understand look at Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. I get it. Do you have a Hall of Fame quarterback or not?
And that's the X factor.
Have the Saints, Corey, not made moves this year to tell you they're all in? Why? Because they have a guy like him, right? Marcus Davenport's right. Move and, you know, and move up to the draft to go get him wasn't because we got time. They thought and wanted an immediate impact player to help at the rush. It hadn't happened, but that's why they did it. They didn't go trade for Teddy Bridgewater because they think, well, maybe we can get him next year. No, it's all in right now. And here it is. It's laid out for you, man. It's either the Cowboys, Rams, if you win this week, but here's the Eagles. They're the sixth seed. They've had to play a playoff game for four straight weeks. Well, now five with this one just to get into the tournament. You're the number one seed. You have the home field. They have to come to you. You got a week to rest. There are no excuses. You know, that's how I look at it. There's no excuses. You know, I mean, it's the playoffs. It's supposed to be easy. Go ahead.
And I would have told you that Saints will get the number one seed and a road to the Super Bowl leads to New Orleans. Man, I like them high. Yeah. To me, it's like there's no excuse right now. I mean, you got what you want. All you got to do is go out there and take care of business. And that's why I said to me that this game, I mean, everybody hyping up and rightfully so, but this game is going to get pulled away early and often. Because, I mean, once you have, you just say it, you have Drew Brees. He will throw you the ball. He will get you open. You don't have no Trubisky. Breeze, as he's been out before. And I love playoff Breeze. Playoff Breeze is 5-0 in the Superdome. Mm-hmm. And just give me Breeze any given time. And I guess what? I love those eyes.
Corey, joining the intern, was watching the game with me on Sunday. And he's sitting next to me on the couch at the house. And I'm like, I mean, I want to say after the fourth one hop, like, you know, you're doing a rock on water that Trubisky threw. I look at him like, that's why I wasn't afraid of Chicago. I'm like, right there. I mean, right there. You can't one hop a receiver who's open for a first down. Cause every possession matters. See, I remember 09 clearly. It wasn't easy, right? I mean, look, you remember the end of the game against the Cardinals. They jumped out and scored first and then everyone, right? And then things got going. I think that it's coming with the Saints thing. Everyone wants to point to the Pittsburgh game. I get it. But isn't that why you should be confident in the Saints? They were in a battle, in a playoff-like atmosphere and game, with that team playing for their playoff lives. And your offense put up 31 points, and your defense came up with big plays and turnovers to win you the game. In that recipes for winning a championship, that's what you want. And
exactly.
Last I checked, Brett Favre needs to throw an interception for you to go to the Super Bowl. That's how tough that game was. So it's not supposed to be easy. It's going to be difficult, right? I mean, that's why it's hard to win a Super Bowl.
And Gus, remember last year, what the players said that they felt like that the season camp fell in too short. And it was like, oh, if we had a chance to go to Philly, we could have beat Philly. Okay, yeah. Then now you got a chance to beat Philly, take care of business.
Yeah, dude, I didn't even think about that. You're right. That's two storylines because they brought it up in the regular season. Right. They hadn't forgot Alvin Kamara's comments. And you know what? Here it is. And look, there's a little history between these two teams in the postseason and regular season. There's no doubt, man. Thanks for the phone call, Corey.
No problem.
Appreciate it. Man, I didn't even think about that. Corey just added a level of my Atlanta. I need some Pepto now. Are you nervous about this game, Joe? Are you nervous about the Eagles and Nick Foles coming in wanting revenge?
Nah.
From their 48-7 loss. They want revenge.
For what?
For a beating. They want to end the Saints season running up the score. Saints fans, are you nervous? Talk a little bit about this and hear from Doug Peterson and Nick Foles when we come back. It's the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
If pests are pestering you, call the experts at Terminix. They'll rid your home or business of disease-carrying rats, mice, roaches, spiders, even crazy ants. Call your local pest control experts at Terminix for a free inspection. Terminix also offers home insulation. In La Rose, call 693-3152. That's 693-3152. 693-3152. Terminix. Power over pests.
Lady of the Sea After Hours Clinic has moved to the new Lady of the Sea Cutoff Clinic, located directly in front of the hospital off of Highway 1 in Galliano. The same After Hours staff will continue to see patients from 5 to 9 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on weekends with no appointment necessary. Now the convenience of a walk-in clinic with a pharmacy at the same location is available for our community. Same provider in a new environment. Lady of the Sea After Hours Clinic, here when you need us.
You travel a lot, don't you?
Well, in business, yes. In basketball, never.
Well, if you're traveling for work, La Quinta by Wyndham has what you need to win on the road.
I mean, you get a spacious work area right in your room, plus charging areas for at least 5 devices.
And do not forget, their hearty, bright side breakfast with waffles, eggs, and meat.
Oh, that's a triple threat.
It's like having home court advantage even when you're away.
Step up your road game and win at business with La Quinta.
Get the best rate guaranteed when you book at LQ.com.
Swish.
Got a hot take?
Everybody listen up.
Let's hear it. Call us at 800-998-1003.
Answer that phone.
Or tweet us at ESPN Radio NOLA. Now, back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Mm-hmm. Not only do they have the dreaded Nick Foles, they also have the Saint killer receiver Golden Tate, who's caught a couple of big passes against the Saints. They had that touchdown in Chicago. Nick Foles, on how many times he practiced the TD pass to Golden Tate?
That one, you know, once or twice. So I just, you know, I read body language, and it comes down to trusting your guy to get open. And you know, he came out big tonight. I mean, he's a playmaker. He made some great catches, and he's really helped us a lot. He's coming along.
Remember, they did score just 16 points. I'm not saying, hey, look, the Bears defense is good. I get it. Nick Foles on his approach to big time games.
I think that those games are tough when you make mistakes early that hurt your team, and you know it can affect you because you want to go out there and you want to help. I think sometimes you can start forcing it. You can be a little gun shy as a younger player, but you know what I've learned is I talk about staying in the moment, good or bad. You know, if I throw a couple touchdowns early, still it's 0-0. Just keep playing. This unfortunately made a couple mistakes, but still the same thing. Hey, just get back. It's 0-0. Just play. Trust your teammates. Play. So, yeah, absolutely. I pull on things that I've learned. I'm always learning. I learned a lot about, you know, myself tonight. I learned a lot about my teammates. And, you know, that's where we continue to grow as a team. And that's that y'all keep asking me every week, like, what's gelling? It's this continual growth through these games that we go through that really helps our team mesh. And, you know, we continue to grow tonight.
See, there it is. There it is. Brandon Marshall, you remember him? The Saints signed him for like a week or two.
You know how his jersey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, another one of your jerseys, Joey. Remember, you got to patent that whole Velcro material back there.
Oh, I got it.
There it is. That was Brandon Marshall's jersey. Brandon Marshall on ESPN talking about how it's not just Foles that's making the difference with Wentz.
This is why they look like a totally different team. It has nothing to do with the offensive side of the ball. It's Jim Schwartz, one of the best guys at what he does. This guy is a defense of genius. That's why this team looks different.
So it's the defense that's turned it around. Look, facts are facts. This team is different than when they last faced earlier in the season. Saints winning that game, improving to 9-1 on the year. Philly dropped to 4-6. Things looked bleak. So PhiladelphiaEagles.com, one of their web reporters, put this up, you know, begging everyone to understand and see that this is a different matchup. And I agree. It's a different matchup. It is. Okay. The Eagles in the first 10 games, he writes, the offense averaged 257 yards per game and completed 68.8% of passes. Foles, Carson Wentz combined for a passer rating of 95.7. The Eagles gave up 31 sacks, good for 3.1 sacks per game. So their O-line was struggling. In the 6-1 run that the Eagles currently are on right now, the Eagles are averaging 280.4 yards per game with a 71.7% completion percentage and a passer rating of 104.8. They've given up a total of just 10 sacks, 1.4 per game, and did not allow defensive stars Aaron Donald, J.J. Watt, or Khalil Mack to account for any of those 10 sacks. The Eagles had 16 total offensive touchdowns in the first 10 games and had 15 in their last 7. They went from averaging 20.5 points per game to 25.4 points per game. And Nick Foles has been the quarterback for 4 of those 7 games in that stretch. And so there you go. So there's numbers that show this team's different, right? But here's the defense. The Eagles have made drastic improvements in stopping the run, changing their rushing yards given up per game from 101.4 to 86. Despite facing these rushers, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, Adrian Peterson, Todd Gurley, and Tariq Cohen in the last 7 games. He writes, a once revolving door secondary has solidified to force 6 interceptions in 7 games after having just 4 in 10 games. Opponents' passer ratings have dropped from 97.9 to 86.6 in that time. Look, there it is. Right? And then he writes, in weeks 13 through 16, New Orleans scored 20.3 points per game and were held to fewer than 20 points in 3 of those contests. In their first 11 games in which they won 10, they were averaging 37.2 points. So the last 3 weeks of the season, Saints went from averaging 37 to 20. And he writes that the Saints' passing completion percentage has fallen from a ridiculous 75.8 in 11 games with an absurd passer rating of 126.3 to 68.7 completion percentage and a passer rating just north of 83. So passer rating gone from 126 to 83, completion percentage going from 75 to 68, points going from 37 to 20. That's the Saints the last 3 weeks. Again, it's the O-line. It's the health. That's the difference to me. So I do think this game is going to be close, and it's not going to be 48-7. I still think the Saints can win it, but it's not going to be 48-7. They better be ready. They need to come out and play football, and not that I don't think they will, but look, I mean, they're playing better. It's, you almost, you heard Peterson say, it's a reference point. But you almost don't even look at that first game. They're two different teams right now. And until the Saints get back to producing those points, you know, it'll be interesting. But the one thing that stood out to me right there was the stopping of the run, right? Because we're going to ask tomorrow, what are some of the keys? Hour 3 coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.